A caller says, I'm very encouraged by Declan's positive attitude in striving to reach his goals and succeeding. Where there is a will, there is a way. I can see a very useful talk from this guy to students. Hello to JP and Packy, working hard down in Irish pressings as well. Can you give a shout out to Declan? We're all very proud of him and all he's achieved and the growth of the company from all of his family, the Wards in Belcritch. Congratulations, Declan, Sarah, and boys, Karen, Ben, and all the team on 20 years. Very proud of your achievement and wish you continued success from your O'Donnell family in Dunluey. Good luck to Irish Pressings, one of our major sponsors from all at Cadw Rovers. So we've had Cadw Rovers and was it Niamh Mura also welcoming or thanking the support given to them by Irish Pressings. And it is to beautiful Gweedore that we return. And in front of me I have Deputy Pat the Cope Gallagher. Deputy Gallagher, an amazing success story, isn't it? And a testament to, you know, ingenuity, determination, resilience, drive. I mean, there's no end of words to describe Declan, Brendan and the crew down there.
Greg, this is a real success story. And, of course, to arrive here today, and if I came in here blindfolded, I certainly wouldn't have believed that I'm in the business park in Gweedore. I would have believed that I was in some business park in Germany or France or some of these places. But to have it here, I think you've got to be here to see it. And they are having the big fry outside, and that delayed me, of course. All of the employees and all of those who are here with them are having a wonderful morning.
I had responsibility for a number of years for the Gaeltacht when I started first back in 1989 when Charlie Haughey was the minister and I was Minister of State. So I have a long association with what was then the industrial estate, which is now the business park here in Gweedore. And to come here and to see this, we'd looked up to those who invested here and who pioneered. But now that it's young lads from home that I knew when them since they were growing up. And I was just thinking of coming across the road that the apples don't fall too far from the tree, because I knew Phil Ward, the O'Donnells from Dunluey on the mother's side and the Wards in Ardmore, very enterprising people. And they had at that time a can-do attitude. And that's what's common. And that's the thread that runs through it to this generation, the can-do attitude of Declan, Brendan and Noel, employing 130 people here in the heart of West Donegal, on the periphery, just not of Ireland, but indeed on the periphery of Europe. It's tremendous to see these young men and this company exporting to other parts of the country, but also to the UK, to Europe, to the Middle East, to Asia, to Central and North America. A great success story, employing 130 people, and long may they last. And the way I'm going, we might be here in 20 years' time again, Greg, having the witness in the 40th.
Yeah, as long as you get your 5K in before you land over for your bacon sandwich, that's the only critical factor there, Pat.
I have that done. I was out at 6:45 this morning, following up from doing my 5K in Phoenix Park yesterday. So over nearly 1,900 days, Greg. So if I continue like that, I could be around for the 40th.
Okay. Back to Declan Ward. Cheers, Pat the Cope. Thanks very much indeed. Back to Declan Ward. You talked about sort of diversifying. How much opportunity is there in sort of the likes of the marine sector and I think also in electrics too? You have been branching out, if I'm reading it correctly.
Yeah, I suppose at the moment we're particularly focusing on the other sector like electrical switchgear, battery technology. Like we've just won a contract for Liebherr to convert, along with Williams Engineering in the UK, to convert the big mining trucks to electric. So all the diesel engines will now be converted to electric. So we're the supplier of some of the battery components into that, and they'll be shipped on to Australia to one of the biggest mining companies in the world. So it's a different sector. Did we know how to do it? No. Will we learn how to do it? Yes. will we be the best at it? I would say yes. So we'll do everything internally.
But it sounds like you have you've established the equipment that you would have to diversify to make the absolute use of it. You have that flexibility that you can switch things up.
Yeah, for sure. We've got space here. If we don't have the machinery, we don't have the know-how, we soon learn and we invest in that machinery, you know, and that gives us diversification. It protects us for the future as well, you know. So
I'm sure you and everyone is very proud of what you do, and we heard it too from Karen a little earlier on. It's lovely to throw open the doors and I suppose to celebrate and give the local invitees and what have you an opportunity to see what yous are doing there, because you know, as you drive past, you might see it and you think, you know, there's great things happening there, but it's great, I think, to sort of get the awareness out and to celebrate success and milestones.
Yeah, it's not something I normally do. I normally just keep my head down and try and support communities and people and I suppose in the area, but I suppose we wouldn't be here without our families. I would like to thank my own family. I would like to thank the management team. We've got a strong team. Noel been here since the start, and I would say he's probably just a bit more than tutor manager, you know. I've got Karen, I've got Emer, I've got Ben. So there's a great local team here. And I guess we wouldn't be here without the support of our families. I would like to thank my own family, Sarah. I put a lot of pressure. It's when you run your own business, it's difficult, you know. It takes away a lot of your time and focus. And I suppose I'd like to thank my wife, Sarah, and my three boys.
I'm glad to come back to you after 11 now. You wouldn't have got home.
Yeah.
No, that's brilliant stuff, indeed. And just a word on, because I've spoken to young people in the past, actually from in and around the Dunlow area, Declan, and they were studying in Galway or what have you. These are home birds, people that really would love to have worked at home, but to pursue their chosen careers, they feel they have to move to other areas of Ireland. And of course, you can't employ all of them. But I mean, it just goes to show there are opportunities for highly skilled, highly trained people in West Donegal. You're not too far from where Randox is, and there are others as well. So, you know, there are opportunities there for people with the right qualifications to work in, you know, really high-level jobs close to home.
Yeah, I suppose as the company grows, your needs change. So generally we would bring in expertise from outside, but our main focus now is to develop that, the more local people, bring them back home, train them. Like there's really, really, technical jobs here. You know, for everything from robotics to computers. We even started doing software development internally. So like, instead of going out buying computer programs, we write our own programs to run the business, and that's that will control the business going forward. So there's so many opportunities here, from tool making to engineering to design to robotics to press operators.
Brilliant stuff. Declan, thank you so very much. And last word, Pat the Cope. It's really, and I know there's other political representatives there. Piers Doherty was on with us earlier. I believe he's there as well. But it's very important that we continue, or even more so, look beyond the pale, isn't it? That we recognise that we can have really successful companies outside of Dublin, outside the more urban areas, and make sure there's a good business environment to sort of help them to prosper, as we have seen with Irish Pressings.
Well, of course, this area where we are here, Greg, was known as the Scrabbin many years ago, and then the industrial zone, and now the business park. And it's a very good example of how jobs can be located in the most peripheral parts of the country. And I must say, my experience over many years in public life, it's thanks to Idris na Gaeltachta, who went out and attracted industry and services from outside. But then they concentrated on the indigenous one people, and then the Irish Pressings, an indigenous company, grew up here from humble beginnings 40 years ago in a small factory with four walls, nothing else, and have developed this into a very, very fine company. So it is an example of how we can attract industry and services into the other parts of the country.
Yep.
And of course, it's helpful to, I do believe, to have the airport close by. People want to get in here quickly and out. They can do that with the two flights per day. So I think there is a future, and there's a great future. When others see the success of Irish Pressings, I do believe that many should follow, and the state agencies are there. But I always believe that the engine of growth in any economy is the private sector. And this is a good example here. Idris na Gaeltachta didn't go to Belcritch and pluck these lads out and say, you set up here. They took the initiative, and then they got the support. And it's a great day for the area. And it's a good example of what can be done, as you have referred to, coming to the peripheral parts.
Yeah, fantastic. And I in a conversation at a Mary from Dunlow event, I heard a bit about this company, and it's amazing actually to be able to dedicate quite a bit of time in the show today to learn more about the company. And also, it's actually kind of inspiring, and I hope it's inspiring people out there. Best wishes to all at Irish Pressings on this fantastic success story from all at the Letterkenny Chamber. Good morning. We're contacting you from Cadoo Rovers Football Club. We'd like to send our congratulations to Declan, Sarah, and all those at Irish Pressings in Gweedore on their celebration of 20 years in business. We wish to thank them for all their sponsorship towards our club over the years. Has Declan or Karen any tooling for making a BLT as quick as your ad breaks? I don't know, but there's stuff being made out there. Outstanding business, and accredited Donegal says, Oisin, and wish Sarah and Declan and all at Irish Pressings all the best from the Mulhollands. And on they come. They keep coming in. Thank you very much indeed, Pat the Cope Gallagher. It was lovely to speak to you as always. Declan Ward, Managing Director, keep on doing what you're doing. It's amazing. Karen Campbell, really impressed with Karen as well, of course, the Sales and Logistics Manager, and the entire team. I'll let you all go back to your bacon butties. We'll chat again soon. Thanks very much. Back with more on the 9 till noon show after we take this commercial break. Now, Gardaí are examining claims that 12 requests were made for acts of violence to be carried out against targets living in Ireland through murder-for-hire sites on the dark web. In five cases, inquiries made about acts of murder had identifiable information. Though the sites are fake, the requests made may well be genuine. Chris Monteiro is a cybersecurity expert and blogger of Pirate.London, and he joins us now. Chris, thanks so much for your time.
Hi there. Happy to be here.
Before we get into sort of these requests, just remind listeners who may not be aware, what's the dark web and how it might be different from the web that they're more familiar with?
Sure. Dark web is a type of super encrypted internet available via the Tor browser, and you're completely anonymous when you go on it. And as a result, various criminal activities can conduct quite openly there. You can buy drugs, stolen data, etc. And it's quite hard for the police to do much about it.
Now, what do we know about these 12 requests? Not insignificant.
Well, I mean, I do this internationally. I'm working through a list of about between 1 and 2,000 names internationally of murder plots around the world. And yes, obviously 12 of them in Ireland. I deal with requests from people wanting to hire up to be hitmen themselves, to people wanting to kill, murder and maim, and all sorts of places. And I've obviously passed a few over to the Gardaí recently.
When you sort of find a target and it seems really genuine, you know, maybe a phone number, an address or a picture, do you contact the potential victim?
It's not scalable for me. I'm just one bloke who's found this information several years ago. So I work with volunteers, I work with the media, and I work with the police when they listen. I categorize the data, I look these people up, I check they're not being murdered and whatnot. And then I just tried to find someone to work with who will take me seriously and pass it on, which is why it's taking so long to get these Irish cases looked into, for example.
Right. So what progress has there been, if any, in relation to that then? I mean, it sounds like you've passed on as much information as one person can to Ón Garda Síochána. Do you get any updates as if it's action, you know, as to whether it's actioned on or?
Well, when you pass information to police, unless you're the victim of crime, they don't really tell you anything. You know, they might ask you for more information, more background, etc. But likely the first I hear about it is when if there's any arrests in the news. Hopefully that will happen. Of course, if it goes on for long enough and nothing's happening, well, I'll have to reach out to the media and say, look, what's going on? These people, have they been contacted? Are they safe? Are they dead? Have the police been involved properly? Are they looking into it? And it depends. You know, these are complicated cases to investigate.
They are, but I mean, if these are cases that you've identified whilst the requests are genuine, I think the sites themselves are bogus, what is getting through the net? You know, what events are happening, be it arson attacks, murder, you know, beatings that are being sort of coordinated in this space? We don't really know.
Well, fortunately, despite what people tell you, there isn't an open market for murder and violence on the internet. If that were to happen, we'd be in real trouble. The problem is people don't understand the difference between what is real, like drugs, and what is fake, like hitmen. For most people, it's all the same. You can get anything on the internet, right? It's not the case. And as a result, this is why this hitman scam's operated so successfully for so many years, and it's kind of fallen into a grey area where the police haven't been able to take it properly. Take it seriously. This is why where I've stepped in.
And how deep do these conversations go? Has there been cases where money was discussed?
There is one major case that's being looked into right now. When I won't share details because it's part of an active investigation. But generally speaking, the police take it more seriously. When someone's paid a significant amount of money for an act of violence, this goes from, oh, there's talk, who knows what it is, to, no, this person's concerned, this person has committed an act of violence at this point. It also helps if when they pay via Bitcoin, the Bitcoin is traceable and you can trace it back to the person who paid it. So that helps with investigations as well. So, I hope to see at least one investigation have a major conclusion. And the other ones, well, we'll see.
From your perspective, Chris, you know, you're happening upon, you know, real actionable information here. And I don't think your frustrations are simply with Irish authorities. This seems to be an issue you come across. How frustrating is it for you?
It's incredibly frustrating. I mean, I've put a hell of a lot of people in prison now, be in the US and Europe and such like that, for horrific crimes of kidnapping, of rape, of beating, of all sorts of things, falling, you know, terrible crimes and the like. And yet all the UK authorities can say is, well, you may have committed some huge crimes obtaining this information, so we can't help you.
Can you give us obviously, too, you know, there's been a big operation spearheaded by Poland recently in relation to catching people dealing in sexual abuse images of children. So when you're in this space, how much is going on? Because, you know, some of this stuff is so extensive. It has to be in every country, in every county, any municipal region, every community. How extensive is nasty behaviour in these spaces?
I mean, it does exist. You know, you talk about child abuse, and like every country and every police force has a team dedicated to handling information and supporting things. This is quite a mature operation, and they do what they can, and they talk to one another. Similarly, drugs, you know, there's drug trafficking, organized crime. There's people who deal with this, be it cybercrime, like hacking and malware. There are teams for this as well. Because I'm dealing with something very different, which is contracted violence over the dark web. And there aren't even actually any hitmen. It's just people trying to do it. It falls into a gap where there are no teams doing this. There's only just individual people here and there who might take this seriously and look into it. So this is why I've had to work on this by myself. There's no international network focused on this.
It's crazy because, you know, what you are doing, you're demonstrating what's happening and how it can be proven. But also, you would think that every police force would have resources to be proactive or preemptive in this type of stuff because you've proven it can be done.
I mean, it's a tricky, you know, you throw a stick on the dark web, you hit cybercrime. There's absolutely loads of it out there. And when it comes to the real cybercrime versus the fake cybercrime is way down the list of police authorities. They're focused on bringing down hacking groups, bringing down drug networks, etc. And I say I found a scam site with some orders which are confusing. They just can't deal with it. And I wouldn't mind, but I've been at this for years now, and it's getting a bit boring.
All right, I get you. I can imagine it'd be like banging your head off a brick wall, even though there's, you know, really good info that you're producing. Chris, thanks very much indeed. That's Chris Monteiro there, who's a cybersecurity expert and blogger of Pirate.London. So just to recap, he found 12 cases where requests were made for acts of violence to be carried out against targets living in Ireland through murder-for-hire sites on the dark web. In 5 cases, inquiries were made about acts of murder and that they had identifiable information. The sites themselves are fake, but the inquiries seem genuine. One was for a woman in a house. One only had a telephone number for the person and a photo. Another attached detail of a person living in Longford. Now, Chris has worked hard in this area. There have been scores of arrests in the US and other jurisdictions, but he also talked about the frustration, and you heard him there at the end, actually, saying he's feeling quite bored about the whole situation. Can I get a happy birthday for Davey at Irish Pressings? Why, of course you can. Happy birthday, Davey. Good morning, Greg. It would also be beneficial to have a rail service reintroduced to add to the economic necessity of the Gwydor areas, indeed, and run that rail to Inishowen. We need it. And it just goes to show, you know, we've got the talent, we've got the drive, we've got the enthusiasm. We just need to support it more. Okay, I'll be back after these messages with Avril from Scratch Films. Stay where you are. Now, the question is, where were you when Meatloaf came to town? Because Scratch Films want to hear your story. Avril Riley's of Scratch Films. Hi, producer, in fact. Good morning, Avril.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am good. Meatloaf played in the Astoria Ballroom in Bundoran. I was working in Bundoran at that time, and that was a funny old time, believe it or not. It was called Planet. Was it the Astoria or was it called Planet Earth when he played there? Can't remember exactly. But anyway,
I
can't believe it's 1990. That's scary.
1990, is that too far away? It was like 35 years ago.
Hold on a second. He must have played then. He must have come back to Bundoran. It couldn't have been 1990.
Oh, he did. He came back to Bundoran, I think, in 2008.
Thank God.
So it's 1990.
All right. No. Just that. Thank God, Avril. That's okay, because I was starting to feel that I've skipped a decade or two. That's good news. Right. Let's start without me interfering here. So he was in the Astoria Ballroom, Bundoran, February 11th, 1919, in the Mount Errigal Hotel on Valentine's Night, the 14th of February, 1990. And you want to hear from people who have memories. Talk to me.
Yeah, so we're doing a documentary that will go on RTE over the Christmas period, and it's really around Meatloaf coming to Ireland to do a tour in 1990. Like, he was a big star back in 1970s, you know, but then he kind of waned a little bit, and Tommy Swarbrick persuaded him to come over to Ireland. So he'd done this tour of Ireland into the ballrooms. I guess we got to remember there was no big venues back then, you know. The biggest venues were probably the ballroom show bands thing. So he went with his band touring through Ireland. So in these little venues, like, some places he played in community halls. Could you imagine, like, Bat Out of Hell being sung in a community hall? You know, the acoustics and the theatrical of all that. So yes, we were looking for people, anyone at all, Greg, you know, roadies, transport people, people that were in the accommodation, people that are at the venues. I'm sure they'll remember it, I'm sure. And any kind of, I guess, little nuggets of memories that they have, you know. And obviously, like, we're really looking for lots of archive as well. If anyone has any photographs or memorabilia to kind of get in touch on it. Even journalists that might have been around at the time maybe did some articles and stuff. We'd love to hear from them. We'd love to hear from everybody, Greg.
Because as you say, you know, his star has ebbed and flowed, really, Meatloaf. But he still would have been huge. This would have been a massive deal, Meatloaf coming to your local town.
Absolutely, Matt. Could you imagine those guys coming into these small towns in Ireland? Like, we didn't have big bands there. They kind of really opened it up, really, for now we know Ireland is a big hub for big bands coming through. You know, I think Meatloaf might have said, like, you know, U2 wouldn't have done the tour that we did in 1990. They wouldn't have done it, you know. So it's like, you know, they were a big deal. And, you know, and I know people that were fans. They were like, they couldn't believe they were going to see Meatloaf in their local community hall. You know what I mean? You know, like, you never get that back again. And then he came back again and again and again. And obviously with the bigger venue. So it's quite special, that 1990 tour. It's quite, you know, personal, I guess. And I'm sure with these small towns, this band rocking up, whether it was on motorbikes, the bus, you know, people must remember that time.
Yeah, maybe you were in a shop and he came in looking for some M&Ms or whatever. Or maybe he landed into a bar and did an impromptu version of I'll Do Anything for Love. Or, you know, there's going to be a ton of stories out there. And these are the type of stories too, I think, Avril, you're pushing an open door. People will love to share them.
Oh, I think so. And I mean, and obviously, like, he played in a lot of different venues. Like, you know, he was in Letterkenny, he was in Belfast, he was in Bundoran, he was in Drogheda, he was in Sligo, he was in Dundalk, you know, in the Oasis. So people from the area might have travelled, you know, I mean, to see the gig as well. So we're looking for anyone at all, any of your listeners that may not, doesn't have to be Bundoran, is any of the venues that he would have been there in 1990. Mm. And just tell us the stories. It can be one line, it can be two lines, it can be exactly as you said, Greg. You might have bumped into him in the street and go, oh God, there's Meatloaf for you. You might have served him a meal, or you might have just had a quick chat with him, like whatever those memories, because I suppose he wouldn't have had a huge entourage then as well, because he was touring rural Ireland, so it would have been very easy to kind of get up close and personal with him too.
Yeah, for sure. And there's bound to be photos, you know, videos that they always emerge that people can dust off. And get in touch with productions@scratchfilms.com. You're expecting this to air over Christmas and RTE, Avril. It's going to be a fun project for 25, part of the work of Scratch Films this year. So we wish you every success. So that's it, isn't it? Production@scratchfilms.com. That's the best way to get in touch.
And I also have a production number as well, if I can call it out.
Please.
It's 087-035-1195.
All right, thanks so very much indeed. Have a great day. There is a gorse fire in the Kerrykeel area as we speak. Gardaí are asking road users to take the Glenvar Road due to the high road being closed due to that gorse fire. So the Kerrykeel area, there is a gorse fire. Please use the Glenvar Road due to the high road being closed due to that gorse fire. Right, as you know, we are keeping our eye on Little Angels and the Little Angels who don't have a space for September. We were anticipating potentially a development this week, a solution. Obviously, that is a relatively complicated process, as I understand, but the fact remains there is still no certainty for at least 9 children and their families. Aoife Dorian is of the Don't Forget Our Little Angels for September 2025 campaign. You know, Aoife, much talk at this point, but no confirmation, no action.
Yeah, Greg, unfortunately, we're kind of still stuck in limbo at the moment. We've had no confirmation again this week. So, yeah, we've another week over us again. So now we're on week 8 now, of just waiting for an answer.
We've just spoken, actually, to Minister Michael Moynihan. And I'm not ambushing you with this. It's literally just confirmation we got from him. He says we've a lot of work done and they're hopeful of a positive announcement by Tuesday. Are you encouraged by that, or does that feel potentially like it could be another false dawn?
I just feel, I think now at this stage, Greg, that we've had so many dates and so many dates and days thrown at us that they've all fallen through. So, yeah, like this week we were hoping for Monday and then we were hopeful for Wednesday again. We were hopeful for yesterday and to we're on Friday again. So, no, we wouldn't hold out much hope for Tuesday either, to be honest.
Listening to the comments in the Dáil, and you do have mm-hmm. to listen to them. The minister says she's confident of spaces, in fact, certain of spaces being available. And then the language gets a little bit more nuanced in that we are really trying to make them available in the communities where they're needed and that they'd be fully resourced and all that type of stuff. The headline could read, Minister guarantees places for September, but I think the devil there is in the detail. And I wasn't encouraged by her comments. I'm not sure about you.
No, I think, I suppose, as a group of parents, when we heard that yesterday, now we were deeply worried because, like that, as you highlighted there, Greg, it was the terminology she used there, it was in the community. And as we all came together as a group of parents, that was our concern, is that our kids cannot be fitted inside the community. Otherwise, we would have applied for those classrooms attached to the schools. But our kids have to get a space in Little Angels, as we've been preaching over the last 8 weeks. So that is not suitable for our kids, unfortunately. So, yeah, that was a bit of a concern for us yesterday, definitely.
Listen, the dogs in the street is that phrase. I believe they're seeking to make spaces available in the old Little Angels school. The problem is that's been earmarked for other services, and I suspect the issue is in locating those other services, but also staffing the old Little Angels school. So are you comfortable to comment on that?
Yeah, like that. I'm not too sure what was proposed for the use of that that building. We were given an option A and an option B, and they're working towards option A, and like that there, it's still not over the line, Greg. So we're still not 100% confident that we'll get that option A. So.
All right, Minister, as I mentioned, Minister Michael Moynihan says he's hopeful of a positive announcement by Tuesday. Between now and then, there is a scheduled demonstration. That's going ahead on Sunday, I take it.
Yeah, listen, Greg, as I said, we live every day and hope that we're still hopeful today that if we don't get any news by 5 or 6 o'clock this evening, then we definitely will go ahead with the protest in Letterkenny on Sunday.
We're in mid-April. A lot of the children we talk of, in fact, I think your child is in this position. There is planning, you know what I mean. It's not simply a place. It has to be the correct resources if equipment is required. There is a lead in time for this. This is why we're pushing it so hard early in the year. Firstly, of course, so people can breathe a little knowing that their child will be catered for inclusively and collectively, but also that it's not just a box ticking so that a minister can say, well, we offered a space, right? It has to be the right space in the right place with the right supports.
Yeah, and I think the key's in the detail when you keep saying it's an appropriate space, and I think that sometimes it's overlooked. And like our kids, it has to be appropriate for their needs. So that's something that we need to highlight as well to the department and to Minister Moynihan. So, yeah.
Okay, we're going to keep the pressure up on the department from our end. We've got that statement from them. If Tuesday passes, you know, that's a problem. But in any case, if you are in and around Letterkenny in the Market Square area at 3 p.m. and you empathise with the fellow members of your community, I'm sure they'd appreciate any support that you can give to them. We'll touch base over the weekend, early next week, Aoife. Hopefully we can put this to bed soon because, as I say, what you're going through is unbearable. It's horrible because you want the best for your children. And, you know, we as parents and caregivers, you know, we feel that just right through our bones as well. So I really hope something positive happens very, very soon.
Yeah, fingers crossed, Greg, yeah.
Take care, bye-bye. That's Aoife Dorian there, who is of the Don't Forget Our Little Angels for September 25 campaign. Let's see if Tuesday passes without an announcement. It's going to be regrettable. can you please give a mention to Rafo Seniors Friday Club? They're hosting a coffee morning today. It runs from Friday the 11th until 1:30 p.m. It's in the Vault House in the Diamond and Rafo. Homemade cakes, scones and treats. Everyone's welcome. Wish Declan and all at Irish Pressings all the best from all at the Ironmore Blue Ferry. Okay, well done, guys. And, you know, it's a great community, the west of the county and our islands. And it's they work together as well and appreciate each other's success. So more than happy to do that for you guys and the beautiful blue. Reply for the tip question. Someone else earlier on was frustrated that their daughter had serviced a big table, a table of 16, I believe, and was given a tip to recognise their efforts, but it had to go into the pooled tip jar. A caller says, a reply for the tip question. The rule of thumb for tips is tips left on the table are to be placed in the tip jar. Tips given at the till are to be placed in the tip jar. Tips given personally to the server are to be kept by the server for a job well done. That's the rule of thumb. How often is that thumb rule applied, I wonder. It's ironic that your contributor with hot issues, Kevin, extolling the virtues of our health system, are to be taken to Aunt McGelvin for treatment. This should be available in our local hospital. But I suppose from his perspective, the ambulance was there in 5 minutes. He was straight into the hospital, into resource, and then they said, right, you need to go to Derry for stints, and he's feeling good now. So I can understand where his positivity comes from. Greg, find out how many people on bed in hospital are waiting on home help. That would be useful information for the hospital to make available to us. I think that would be very useful information because it would give us a better understanding as what's happening in the hospital that is to some extent outside of their control. So I'd be more than happy to receive that information. A few weeks ago, I couldn't get an ambulance for a stroke patient. I had to take them by car and get them to the LUH. Okay, that's not good. Greg, did Micheál Kolomagel-Nasbet just reference Cuba as being a role model for Ireland? Cuba, one of the most corrupt places in the modern world, where the locals are forced to use a different currency and where standard bank cards won't work because of internal politics sanctions. Sure, the weather's nice for there, but definitely not a role model for a modern state. I see where he's coming from. I don't know anything about Cuba or its politics, but I did check up actually during the 10 o'clock news, and it seems internationally their health service is really quite accessible, well-funded and well-resourced, and is seen as sort of like a good health service. That's what he was referencing. And I sort of was a wee bit like, oh, okay, let me have a look. Yesterday afternoon, I was coming through Dunfanaghy and the public toilets were locked. I had to go to a local business to use their toilets. Public toilets are not open in lots of places. How was the retail park in Letterkenny ever given the go-ahead without public toilets? Well, hopefully planning laws have changed that their toilets are provided now where they weren't in the past. My father is in Letterkenny Hospital the last 6 months, says a listener, today. Can't get home because they don't have carer staff. They don't have carer staff. They're great, but they have more or less told me that someone will have to die before you get help. Carers are needed in Newtown Cunningham. He needs cared for three times a day, twice a week. 6 months in, is he 6 months in hospital waiting discharge, or was he in 6 months in hospital and is recently been okayed for discharge? Very good portable toilets on Ventry Beach in Kerry. Very well maintained. Great. A caller says, if Sinn Féin had have backed the formation of a government, they might have got more done. Look at what the Healy Rays are doing for Kerry. Okay, that's another point. But I mean, they're of the position that they believe that they're not going to facilitate Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael in government any longer, are they? And want to have a crack at it themselves. We'll see. A caller says, what if Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin in government together? Brendan and Pearce are clapping each other's views. The name calling of Trump by Brendan is below him. Yes, there are problems with Trump, but Trump is not elected to represent Ireland or the world. America is broke financially, and any person who would have been president of America would face that vista. To stand and do nothing is a choice. A good economist needs to see the bigger picture. There needs to be mutual economic relationships. And in fairness, America has been screwed for decades by Ireland, Europe and China. It's not about Trump as such. It's about the dire place America is in for economically in Biden. But you see, just one thing here. Just because America has a deficit with us or a deficit with China, a trade deficit, it doesn't mean they're being screwed. Like, there's not massive taxes on American cars into Europe. That's a misnomer. But anyway, that's where we have to leave it today. I read that one. Okay, that's the Gorse Fire and Kerry Kill. I read that. Okay, listen, that's where we have to leave it. Thanks for all of you for supporting us this week, listening, texting, watching, all of that. Great to have you on board. Thank you to Caroline Orr, who researches and produces the show. And of course, assisted by Shannon Wilkins, working hard on our socials and other areas of the show. We're back with you on Monday, so have a great weekend.